Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Free For All. I'm your host, Big John, and Free For All, for those of you that may have stumbled across us for the first time, is a show dedicated to largely principles of libertarianism. Without getting into the various different shades of libertarianism, and we basically try to cover the spectrum here, and we try to do it by reviewing issues of the day, current issues, and then I'll give you my take of what I think should be a libertarian response. A libertarian response, not the libertarian response. So let's get that straight. I don't profess to be the final say on all things libertarian. I'm just another schmuck with an opinion. So take it for what it's worth, okay? Before we get on to this week's topics, let me remind everyone, you're listening to this show or watching this show on Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com platforms. You can check us out on our website, grumblingsmedia.com, YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, Gab, Truth Social, basically anywhere you could see video podcasts, we're there. Look for at Grumblings Media. That's our handle everywhere, at Grumblings Media, all one word. Or you can find us audio only on all the typical traditional podcast outlets like Apple, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio. Basically, anywhere you can find a recorded podcast, you'll find us there. So that's all for the basics. My partner, William Del Pilar, gets very upset if I don't mention all the outlets that we're on. So there you go, William. I did it. So stop yelling at me this week. Okay. The first thing I want to talk about is immigration. Not that this is any news to anyone, that this is a hot button topic, not just for libertarians, by the way, for anyone of any political stripe. Immigration seems to be the number one issue right now, right? Like, there's always hot button issues that define presidential election cycles. It could be abortion, war. And here you've got a couple of things going on in the country right now. You still got the issue with the Ukraine going on. And that, of course, is of paramount importance to many libertarians. Many libertarians, I would venture, are mainly libertarians because they're very much anti-war. And that's cool. I don't think any libertarian is actually pro-war, but I would venture that there are a certain small percentage or maybe a significant minority of libertarians whose number one and main focus, their litmus test for being a libertarian, is how anti-war they are. So for them, I would venture that the Ukraine is going to be the top issue this election cycle. And how do we get out of Ukraine? How do we stop funding the hostility in the Ukraine. So I acknowledge that. But for many others, immigration might be either number one or number two on their list. And this is not a non-scientific sort of pulse that I have, right? I can't quote any polls right now. It's just from monitoring things on X and on other libertarian sites, reading the blogs and everything. That seems to be the number one concern, that in Ukraine. And what I find interesting on immigration is that, a couple of years ago, I would have thought that I could tell you what the libertarian position, more or less, would have been on immigration, right? I think that, and look, when I say libertarian, I include, say, from the minarchists all the way to the ANCAPs and the anarchists, right? So I'm not excluding anyone in particular. So the libertarian position to me always seemed to fall somewhere between the least restrictive immigration policy possible, meaning that the only thing that we would check you for coming into the country is if you had any communicable diseases, maybe to make sure that you aren't like a serial killer that another country just emptied their jails, for example, like Castro did, and deposited a whole bunch of criminals on our shores. But beyond that, really, I don't think any libertarian would have told you we should be discriminating or turning people away for any other reason, right? Why? Because part of the libertarian philosophy would be like, well, people have natural rights that aren't defined by any arbitrary borders, right? So that might be like, say, the minarchist position is a like a least restrict the least most restrictive immigration policy. Some people call it the Ellis Island policy, that you want to have, say, 10 Ellis Islands positioned around the country, and those would be ports of entry where you would funnel all immigration through. So that way you disincentivize people to cross borders illegally, and you incentivize them to come in legally. They have a clear path to citizenship, and again, the overwhelming majority of immigrants will be coming through those known ports of entry into the country. And what I used to think would be the position would be a position of most anarchists, which would be open borders. So you would say, like an anarchist's pure anarchy, believing that there should be no central authority, no state. It's kind of logical then that it would follow that anarchists would support open border policies, meaning anybody who can get in, property rights in the free market would determine the number of people who are coming in, whether it would be advantageous for immigrants to come here. And that would be it, that you wouldn't be discriminating necessarily on country of origin, religion, ethnicity, or anything like that, which I think would also be the minarchist position, right? And I used to think, like, hey, here's something just about, if we took those two sort of positions as goalposts, that like the overwhelming majority of libertarians would fall somewhere in between those two points. But something weird, I think, has been happening recently, whereby there seems to be like this new libertarian position, which is restrictive borders, meaning shut the borders down, defend individual state borders with almost what I think might be considered lethal intent, and in essence say, keep out. No illegal immigration. Now, again, this is sort of weird phraseology, right? By saying illegal immigration, most, if you're a good enough polemicist, if you're a good enough sophist, you'll sit down and you could argue with someone, and you can argue this point. You could say, well, I'm not referring to legal immigration. I'm referring to illegal immigration. Well, okay, fair enough. But illegal and legal, the only thing that makes something illegal is you're defining it as illegal, meaning like coming across the Rio Grande into Texas is illegal immigration. Would you feel better if those same people were funneled into a defined point of entry, similar to what Ellis Island was for immigrants at the turn of the 20th century and in the 19th century, where they would basically come into Ellis Island, and then that would be their gateway into America? Would you feel better about that? And I think, and again, this is my feeling of, from talking to people, or more accurately, arguing with people on Twitter, is that there's this growing faction that does not even want that. That basically, in their opinion, the country's full, and we don't need more immigrants coming in. We don't, legally or illegally, and we don't want them setting up shop here. There's not enough room for them, and with the oppressive nanny state stealing our money, and then providing benefits to illegal aliens and so forth, that at this point we should just pretty much reduce immigration to drips and drabs coming into the country. And to me, that always this seems like such a counterintuitive libertarian position. And there's several prominent libertarians that kind of hold these positions. Now, I'm sussing out who views it as a numbers game, who views it as something that's inherent to libertarianism. I've seen Dave Smith try to argue some of these points. And listen, Dave Smith, to me, he's like a libertarian Ben Shapiro. I'm sure he would not appreciate that characterization. But what I mean by that is, I think you could take Dave Smith, much like Ben Shapiro, and given any topic, give them enough time to research it, and they would debate circles around anyone that is put up against them, right? They're very skilled speakers. They're very skilled debaters. They overwhelm you with facts. They overwhelm you with syllogisms, and you find yourself after some point giving up, right? So I'm not quite sure where Dave Smith is. Like, I know he said there's that's in some of his readings of Rothbard that you would have this acceptance of non-open borders and of defending state borders and everything. And again, it's not that I'm an open borders guy, right? I'm not an open borders guy. I'm not an anarchist. I've always said I consider myself a minarchist. I kind of believe in a night watch state, the least government possible before you get to no government, right? So, to be transparent, my position is immigration is a net positive for the country. It's a net positive for the people in this country. And the only thing we should be looking at, again, is are criminals coming into the country and are people with communicable diseases coming into the country? Anything other than, yeah, are most immigrants poor? Yes, that's why they're coming here. They have miserable, horrible lives where they currently are. Through the accident of birth, they're just not in a position to provide for their families. They're not in a position to provide for themselves. There's no economic opportunity. There's no degree of personal freedom. As much as libertarians bitch and complain that their liberties are being infringed upon by the U.S. government, and they are, compared to many other countries, this is a paradise, right? So when you look at immigrants who are coming to this country, you say, oh, all the poor immigrants, all we get is poor people coming here. Yeah, yeah. Those are the people that are coming here because they have incentive to come here. And I don't mean incentive like come here and get on welfare. I mean, they have incentive to come here for an opportunity to make it, man. The traditional American dream to come here and make it and work hard and get their own business and send their kids to school and get an education for themselves and their families. Right? I don't understand where people have all of a sudden said, like, oh man, we're not getting the cream of the crop. Well, yeah, that's always been the case. It's poor people coming here to look for an opportunity. Right? Not every illegal alien that comes here can be like Melania Trump, you know, who comes here, overstays a visa, and then marries a rich guy. Those are not the majority of cases, right? The majority of cases are that it's going to be poor people who can't scratch out a living. They're coming here for that opportunity, right? But so when someone says, like, hey, you know, so when Dave Smith says, hey, man, look, the border's being overrun, the southern border's being overrun, you can't have open borders there. Fair enough. I agree with him. And again, I'm not an open borders proponent. I know someone like Jacob Hornberger is an open borders proponent. But Jacob has always said, you know, when I interviewed him, he always said, look, I'm a hardcore anarchist. I think the government needs to be torn down, basically. Everything should be voluntarism, like everything is voluntary transactions between individuals. And he grew up in Texas. He grew up in a border town in Texas. And he says, I never once had any fear of Mexicans and Latin Americans and South Americans coming into, pouring into the country. I've never had one ounce of fear of him. And God bless Jacob. I believe him when he says that stuff. And he's been at it a lot longer than I have. I don't doubt his sincerity, but I also admit that I'm not like that. I don't think we should have open borders. But at the same time, I'm more concerned, not with the Dave Smiths of the world necessarily, who are sitting there arguing against open borders, against increased immigration, perhaps, with logical sort of pushback. I'm more concerned about the people who are falling into the unfortunate American tradition of bias and hatred towards immigrant groups. And listen, man, this is nothing new in this country, right? This has always been the case in this country. Going back in our history, like, listen, man, I'm going to look over here. I have something pulled up just so I don't get the dates wrong. But listen to some of these anti-immigration legislation that this country has passed. The Naturalization Act of 1790, which limited citizenship to free white persons of good character. Okay, that was the law. It's 1790, as early as 1790, right after the formation of this country, limiting citizenship to free white persons of good character. Think about that. The Alien and Sedition Act of 1798 allowed for the deportation of persons deemed as threats to national security. Now, you might say to yourself, what's wrong with that? I mean, certainly we don't want like terrorists in this country. We don't want guys having established a government tearing it down. That's reasonable. But, you know, the language in something of that clearly was deported, right? It wasn't like jail. It was deported. And does anybody suspected of that? So you could already see. And for libertarians who are naturally distrustful of government, you know, this type of thing would worry you, right? Like, it's like, hey, we could just pick somebody out, say we don't like them. We don't like the cut of their jib. And we're sending them back to wherever the hell they came from, right? The Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882 prohibited all immigration of Chinese laborers. Just like, hey, we don't like the Chinese. We don't want them coming in. We've got too many here already. In 1882, stop. We're not letting them in anymore. The General Immigration Act of 1882 put a tax on the head of every immigrant that came into the country. And excluded entire groups of people from coming into the country. You had alien contract labor laws at the end of the 19th century, 1885, 1887. Certain classes of laborers were not allowed to come into the country. And this was more of the protectionist thing, right? Like, hey, we don't want to take jobs away of a particular industry away from Americans. So, you know, we're going to keep anybody who comes here looking for work in a particular industry, we're going to exclude them by law. The Asiatic Barred Zone Act, otherwise known as the Immigration Act of 1917, like basically legislators in Washington said, like, here's a part of the map. We're drawing an X over it, and nobody's allowed to come from this part of the world. And to no one's surprise, it was from Asia and the Pacific Islands. The Johnson-Reed Act established quotas that restricted immigration from Southern and Eastern Europe and continued to virtually ban all immigration from Asia, right? In 1952, the McCarran-Walter Act. It was considered progressive in terms of anti-immigration law, right? Because what they did was they kind of said, like, okay, we can't use race as an exclusionary basis for immigration, right? Like, we can't say we don't want brown people, we don't want freckled people, none of that, right? But what they did was it tweaked the law to say, hey, we can ban everybody who wants to come here from Somalia. We can ban everyone who wants to come here from Persia or from Iran or from Ireland, right? So while it didn't say, hey, no blacks allowed, no Irish allowed, like you couldn't do that according to the 1952 McCarran Act, but what you could do is say, I don't want anybody from Ireland, I don't want anybody from Africa, from the continent of Africa or from a particular nation. So, you know, again, clearly anti-immigration intent there. In 86, you had the Immigration Reform and Control Act, which now shifted the onus away from the immigrants themselves to potential employers in the U.S. So employers who ended up hiring illegal immigrants, illegal aliens into the workplace were being penalized. And then in 1996, you had like a refinement of the 1986 Act, which expanded the list of crimes for which immigrants could be deported. It also made legal permanent residents subject to deportation for commission of certain crimes, et cetera, et cetera. So you had this legislation, very clear, anti-immigrant, and it's not recent, okay? And it's not restricted to a certain time in our history. It's been there from almost day one, and it continues till today. So while the U.S., you know, while we have the Statue of Liberty here in New York Harbor, you know, give us your tired, your poor, the wretched masses struggling to be free or yearning to be free, right? On the one hand, we have that in our national history, something to be proud of, while concurrently, hey, we don't want any of these dirty immigrants in our country. And the U.S. has struggled with that dichotomy. You know, it's not particularly clear to me why this dichotomy. I mean, I understand the dynamics of human nature, like you always feel threatened by newcomers. But libertarians especially should be able to think their way through that, I would hope, right? But what's happening now in this immigration debate is not a debate over least restrictive immigration policy. It's not a debate between that and open borders. I mean, it exists. But now you've got this other thing worked in. And I've heard people refer to this. They'll say, well, you know, the elite, the government, is employing the great replacement, replacement theory. Because, you know, there's elites, usually Democrats, who are allowing illegal immigration for political purposes and or to replace white people in this country. Now, I want to be very clear. Not everyone who favors limiting immigration is a proponent of the great replacement theory. As a matter of fact, I would say the majority of people aren't. Like, I'm not going to accuse everyone who's anti-open border, like myself, to be a proponent of the great replacement theory. But what troubles me is that there's enough people who associate the two, who call themselves libertarian, who put this theory forth. Okay? Now, and they get upset when I call them out on it. Now, one of them is Joshua Smith. I'm not going to start another Twitter war with him or anything like that. But I want to be clear why I was so, you know, my partner ran into Joshua at the California Libertarian State Convention. I'm in New York. He's in San Diego. So he was able to go in my stead and just have a presence there. And he ran into Josh Smith out there. And look, I'll be upfront. My partner told him, he goes, hey, I heard you had beef with my partner, Big John, on this issue, you know. And Josh said, look, the only beef I had with him is that he kept calling me a white supremacist. Which I did, you know, in typical Twitter bravado. You know, I said, but what triggered that for me, which I was very clear about, was not that I thought he was a Nazi, not that I thought the language he used to describe his position on open borders and or his anti-open border position, rather, was co-opting the language of white nationalists. Like, the people who promote this great replacement theory in the U.S. are some guys like Nick Fuentes, Richard B. Spencer, right? They think there's a plot, and pick by who the puppet masters of this plot are, whether it's Zionists, George Soros, Jews in general, Democrats, libtards, people, pedophile, like take your pick, the usual gang of suspects when it comes to conspiracy theories, white nationalist conspiracy theories, right? And their premise is that there's this deliberate orchestrated plot to replace white people and white culture in this country. Okay. And that's what I think is troubling here from what I see in the libertarian debates that I see about open borders and immigration policy. And again, can't emphasize this enough. I'm not saying anybody who's anti-open borders supports the great replacement theory, but it troubles me when someone invokes the great replacement theory, because of all the language, all the imagery you could invoke to put your point across, why are you using white supremacist, white nationalist terminology? I don't understand. Why would you do that to put your point across? Are you being cool? Are you being hip? Are you doing it to troll people? Because if that's your goal, to troll, which, you know, some of these, like, younger libertarians, like, I call them Mises kids, but that would be unfair to the Mises caucus, I suppose. But, you know, they seem to get off on, like, hey, I'm going to show up, be cool, not give a shit, troll everybody, and, you know, but you know, I'm really a libertarian. I'll put my point across as a libertarian. And my whole point is, you're probably not. I mean, honestly, you probably would be more at home with the MAGA types, with the so-called patriots, with the nationalists. And that's what's troubling to me. Like, the Great Replacement Theory originated, most likely, with a French writer named Renaud Camus. Not Albert Camus. Renaud Camus. And it was a book he wrote, I think, in 2010 or 2011 called Le Grand Replacement. You know, I'm sorry. My French hasn't been tested since high school. So, but it translates into The Great Replacement. And basically, he was talking about European culture, European populations, European whites or white Christians being replaced via immigration by non-Europeans. And he was particularly worked up about Muslim immigration into his countries, into Europe. And, you know, what's interesting is, and look, to me, it's obvious that it's a conspiracy theory. To me, it's obvious that it's a race-based conspiracy theory, okay? But what's also interesting is this is not new in our country, not new in our history. Like, I mean, if you look at the U.S. history, you see where these theories, these conspiracy theories, these assumptions are made, and then they gather enough steam where legislation gets passed. And then you have anti-immigrant violence, anti-immigrant emotion and hatred and spew. Like, I mean, if you watch the movie The Gangs of New York, right? The Martin Scorsese movie, great movie. If you've never seen it, I recommend it. In that movie, it chronicled the conflict in the Five Points of New York, again, because that's where all the immigrants first dock, right? They would get to Ellis Island, and the first time they set foot on American soil would be in the Five Points of New York, which is the tip of Manhattan, if you kind of looked at the map, right? So the nativists were the people born in America, or people who were and look, there's parallels between the nativists at that point in the late 19th century, mid to late 19th century, the nativists of then, with the America First crowd now. Like, the parallels are almost uncanny, right? The nativists were like, you can't have these dirty immigrants come to this country, take our jobs. We're already fighting in the Civil War, and we can't have that. We can't have these dirty immigrants. And by the way, you know who the dirty immigrants were back then? The Irish. In generally speaking, Catholics. Okay? Because to the white Protestants, those were the dirty immigrants. Jews, of course, are always hated in this country, right? But, you know, in terms of, there's always conspiracy theories and suspicions around that. But in particular, the nativists, you know, at that point, were railing against the Catholics, who they claimed, you know, had no allegiance to any American president or politician. Their only allegiance was to the Pope. So even though they came to this country, their only allegiance was to the Pope. I mean, the movie did a good job of capturing that, but it's a matter of historical record, right? There was actually a political party in the mid-19th century. I think it was in 1853 or 1850s, you know, 1850s, let's say. It was called the Know-Nothing Party. It was also known as the American Party, right? And basically, this party was characterized by nativist and anti-Catholic positions, right? They basically existed just to shit on immigrants, particularly Catholic immigrants and Jewish immigrants, okay? It was an actual political party, and it wasn't a joke political party. Millard Fillmore, the 13th president of this country, after he got out of office, he ran for president again as a member of the Know-Nothing Party. It wasn't some fringe group. I mean, it didn't last, thankfully, it didn't last too long, but it actually formed, okay? And you kind of see parallels to the conditions that kind of formed the Know-Nothing Party. Today, nativists, Americans, America First, nativists and patriots, okay? It's all this. It's the same sort of sentiment with slightly different words, ladies and gentlemen. And you kind of expect it out of the Republicans. You might expect it out of some corners of the Democrats. I honestly thought that libertarians, with our individual first positioning, the rights of the individual, the belief that our rights do not come from governments, they are ours by nature of us being human beings. In my mind, I can't reconcile an anti-immigration position on just that very basic premise of libertarianism, okay? The other stuff we can debate, right? Like, yeah, if we have a nanny state, if we have welfare programs, if we have handouts and set-asides that favor one group over the other, yes, now you're providing a non-free market incentive for immigration, right? And that is wrong. I disagree with that, right? I'm not supporting of that. But the concept that someone wants to come here to make a better life for themselves, as long as they don't rob you, as long as they don't, like, physically assault you, why would you be against that? Right? There is also the concept that what makes this nation great is, the it's hack, but it's a classic melting pot. We're better off by having different perspectives, different viewpoints, different origins in this country. But, you know, it's like I said, the parallels in history is baffling to me. The Know-Nothing Party, the Immigration Restriction League was another thing that happened at the turn of the 20th century, 1894. The Immigration Restriction League sought to limit immigration entirely. And now they had shifted away from Catholics in particular. Right, that was the middle of the 19th century. They had evolved by the time the 20th century rolled around in 1894. They now had moved on to, hey, we're going to just ban Southern and Eastern Europeans. That's our real sort of, like, we don't want that. We don't want those guys here, right? And they would do things like they would advocate for literacy tests for immigrants, and ridiculous. The tests for entry and things like that. It's nothing new, okay? So that's my point. So I'm sitting here struggling, like, are there libertarians of good conscience out there? And please feel free to hit me up on Twitter at BigJohn_XXM or in the comments for this video. You know, like, are there libertarians of good conscience that are opposed to immigration? And if so, what is your opposition? Is your opposition strictly limited to open borders? Is it strictly limited to open borders? Because if that's the case, I can probably agree with you on that. And we could form some sort of alliance, right, ideologically. Right? Yeah, I understand. I'm not. I'd be ignorant and I wouldn't be acknowledging reality if I said, no, it's okay, have millions of people pouring over the southern border, running roughshod over people who own land there, their private property. You know, they have their private property rights to take into consideration. And if the state exists for any reason, it's to protect people in their property and their person. So I get that piece of it. We can agree on that. But where's this vitriol coming from? You know what I mean? Why are so many anti-open border libertarians so eager to grab their guns and head out to the border and can't wait to shoot one of these dirty immigrants crossing the border illegally? It's baffling to me. It really is. And I'm not looking necessarily to get into a fight with anybody over this. I'm just trying to understand. How do you reconcile the rest of your libertarian outlook with that? Like I said, there's a wide scope of libertarians. I'm not going to agree with every libertarian on everything. Like I said, most of the ANCAP folks, you know, if I have 10, 20% disagreement with other libertarians, it'll be with those folks, right? It'll be with the anarchist types, typically speaking, just because I'm not an anarchist. what I'm struggling to understand, like, I expect that kind of crap out of Republicans. I expect that kind of crap out of MAGA people, you know? Because for them, it's always a short jump to, we don't like illegal aliens streaming across the border in a sort of like disorganized way. We hate that. We want to put an end to that. And then slowly you start hearing things like, well, you know, we've got too many of this group, we've got too many of that group. This group will take away American jobs and blah, 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 blah. All right. And of course, you're still dealing with the lies about immigrants being the cause of more crime. And it ramps up, right? In the news now, every day, you'll hear about some illegal alien who committed some horrific crime. Okay. Meanwhile, just about every study I've looked at, I just was reading up for this show. I was reading, catching up. I was reading on a study that came out of the Cato Institute. The incarceration rate for illegal aliens is half, less than half that of native-born Americans per capita. Okay? Less than half. And legal immigrants is even less than the illegal. So out of the three groups, and again, they're varying in size, so these are per capita figures, like the group that commits the lowest number of crimes per capita is legal immigrants, then comes illegal immigrants, then come native-born American citizens, okay? And if you took out immigration crime from that, which whether you do or not, it's still less, but it becomes like the illegal immigration goes even further down because you're taking away the immigration crime as part of that total, right? Which otherwise it wouldn't be illegal aliens, right? Illegal immigrants. So, you know, the press is more than happy to gin up this fear. Republicans in particular are more than happy to gin up this fear. Believe me, I've spent in New York, I've spent zero time worrying about illegal immigrants coming to assault me. I'm more worried about the people I grew up with assaulting me. And folks, I grew up in the 70s in the South Bronx. For those of you too young to know what that means, feel free to look it up. Okay? You're not talking to a white suburbanite who's somewhere in the middle of nowhere. I'm not a rural guy who my next door neighbor, my closest neighbor is, you know, 4 miles away from me. I've lived in the middle of these people. By these people, I mean every different type of person. If you look up Queens, that where I lived for a decent chunk of my life, it is the most ethnically diverse area of land, patch of land in the world. You'll find more different ethnicities, ethnic origin in Queens than you will anywhere else in the world. Okay? We managed to get by. We get by fairly well. So again, for those of you, I'm more, like I said, I'm not worried about people who have good faith disagreements with me on open borders and least restrictive immigration policy possible. I have less beef with those guys. And the ones who are more than willing to invoke and promote nationalist, racist replacement theory, great replacement theory, and to use their language. Like, if you're only using their language for shock value, shame on you. I'm not going to tell you you shouldn't say it because I'm a free speech advocate, okay? Say whatever you want. But the truth of the matter is, if you're doing it just for the shock value, shame on you. You shouldn't be doing that. You're really just not adding to the debate in any meaningful way. Okay? Like I said, hit me up in the comments. Let me know what you think, if you agree with me, or if you don't agree with me. You know, I joke. I was talking to Larry Sharp off camera a couple of weeks ago, and I asked him about this. And I said, you know, I know now I'm turning into a bit of a paranoid because I'm convinced that you've got all these MAGA guys and white nationalists who have somehow infiltrated the Libertarian Party. There's too many of these little instances where the debates, you'll be in a room with 20 libertarians, and there's always two or three of them that will take any debate, any ideological conversation into this direction, where it's like you're talking about great replacement theories, you're talking about George Soros or Bill Gates planting nanoviruses and vaccines that are meant to take over your brain cells and shit like that. And it's always coming from, like, you know, these dark corners of our movement here. And I'm concerned about that a little bit, to be honest with you. Larry seems to think, well, I don't want to put too many words in his mouth, but Larry was trying to convince me that that's just because we tend to be a contrarian party. We're always the party of the people who are upset at whoever's in power. So if liberals are in power, we get a certain percentage of disgruntled conservatives. If conservatives are in power, we get a certain amount as Libertarian Party of disgruntled liberals, right? And to a large extent, I'll agree with Larry on that. But at the same time, it doesn't mean we should tolerate nonsense as a party, okay? Speaking of nonsense as a party, what's going on with RFK? I don't understand why as a party we're flirting with the idea of having RFK be the nominee. I've talked about this before. At the California State Convention, you had RFK, Cornel West. Jill Stein was invited, but she didn't make it. Last episode, we had Tyler Collins on. He's an official out there with the local party, and I think he's an at-large member of the state party as well. And he was trying to say, well, you know, it exposes our ideas to a larger group of people, but, you know, you could tell. And I think he actually said he didn't agree with those three in particular being there. But I mean, this flirtation with RFK continues, right? And sometimes you'll hear McCardle say, well, you know, it's not up to me. I'm not the one. And her acolytes will say, you know, well, it's not her decision who shows up and who doesn't. And, you know, if someone wants to run, all they have to do is file and show up. And if they get the candidates, you know, that somehow sounds like nonsense to me. You know what I mean? I mean, if the California State Libertarian Party of California, the biggest one in the country, can figure out how to exclude libertarian candidates from the debate, maybe they can figure out how to exclude non-libertarian candidates. You know what I mean? Like, if they could figure out ways to make sure that Joshua Smith couldn't be on that debate stage, if they could figure out ways to make, I will give them the benefit of the doubt that Chase Oliver didn't show up on his own, but if you could have that and not have one of the leading candidates like Chase Oliver, someone like Joshua Smith, not be, and again, I have no love for Joshua Smith, right? But it was kind of messed up that he couldn't get on that stage and that he was actively they tried to actively prevent him from passing out literature or you know, and look, Adrian Malagon could have good reasons for that. But my point is, if you could at least attempt to prevent certain bona fide libertarian candidates from appearing at your state convention, you can't figure out a way to not invite RFK, to not allow the perception that RFK would be a welcome candidate of the Libertarian Party. Why? So we can have Aaron Rodgers as a VP? So we can have Jesse Ventura? That's what the Libertarian Party needs, right? As a pro wrestler, running as a VP, along with a nutty environmentalist, pseudo-socialist in RFK, who hasn't met a vaccine yet that hasn't been a government plot, going back to the polio vaccine. Like, that's what we need? Like, that's what we need so bad that we're willing to ignore the fact that they're not libertarians at all? Very strange to me. I don't understand what we're doing. If it's a money grab, it's a money grab, but let's not pretend that it's anything other than a money grab. But it can't be a money grab if the candidate coming in has less ballot access than what the LP has. So, like I said, that's strange to me. I don't understand why we're still flirting with it. I know certain candidates have expressed continuing frustration. I know I saw where Lars Mapstedt was obsessed. I think we're scheduled to have, I think, Mike Tremont on next episode. And I'll ask him about that to sort of get his pulse. I know the first time I talked to him was 6 months ago, maybe on the Big Questions with Big John. And at that time, you know, this wasn't percolating as much. And therefore, I didn't get a chance to ask him directly about these flirtations with candidates like RFK and, you know, Cornel West and, you know, why are they at our conventions? But he was at the convention in California. So I'll ask him next week. I'll make sure I'll make a note for myself to ask him what he thinks about all this. But to me, it seems kind of silly. I don't understand. And we have really good candidates, mostly good candidates this year, this cycle, rather. And what does it tell them when they've put so much effort, so much blood and sweat into this campaign, and most of them, the overwhelming majority of them, have conducted themselves, in my view, properly. They cut good images. They are not candidates that the average voter will look at and say they are ass clowns. None of them cut that image. Well, almost none of them cut that image. Okay. They are legitimate. They project the right type of image, right? Like, libertarian doesn't mean you have to look like a slob. Libertarian doesn't mean rejecting wearing a suit. Libertarian doesn't mean that you have to throw out four-letter words if you're a presidential candidate, and curses and trolling behavior, okay? That's something that a teenager thinks would be cool in a presidential candidate. That's not what adults view it as being productive presidential candidate. So again, like, and look, I know some of you are saying, like, who are you? You're a fucking asshole, Big John. And I've heard you make off-color remarks, and I've been on your Twitter feed, and I know you've attacked people with certain remarks. Absolutely true. And if you ever see me running for president, please be the first one to say I shouldn't be running for president. Or for any office, for that matter. Because I have zero interest in it. And because of that, I'm free to say whatever I want. But if I were running for office, guess what? I wouldn't be wearing a t-shirt. I'd be putting on a suit and a tie. I'd be showing up to these things on time. I'd make sure I had cogent arguments. I wouldn't be invoking nationalist talking points. All of that fun stuff, right? It's just a matter of being professional, for lack of a better word. Okay. The last topic I want to hit on, because it's in this news cycle and it should really be a scary issue for everyone, is this bill in Congress. And let me pull up the actual title of the bill, because I don't want to shortchange any of our wonderful legislators who gave us this nonsense. That would be House Bill H.R. 7521, or if you want to know what it is by its English name, Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act. And in case you haven't guessed it, this is the so-called TikTok ban that the House recently passed. Now, this was passed on the 13th, March 13th. And it passed with bipartisan support, so you know there's something wrong with it, because both parties decided to put aside their petty nonsense in the House to sign on to this. This is one of those weird ones. 50 Republicans voted against it, among them guys like Tom Massey, and surprisingly enough, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Oh my God. She's the classic case of the stop clock being right twice a day, right? Usually someone that I can't wait to be booted out of Congress. I view her as like the worst of the worst when it comes to the MAGA crowd, right? A pandering nothing. But she got this one right. She voted no on the banning of TikTok. Thomas Massey voted against it. 15 Democrats voted against it as well. but like I said, overwhelmed by passed by parts, and now heads to the Senate. In the Senate, it's less clear that it will be passed. Rand Paul has already, and it's been, and oddly enough, it's bipartisan opposition to it in the Senate. It's less like, I mean, I don't know if it'll pass or not, but there is substantial opposition to it. I know Rand Paul has gotten up, and he even, I saw him on Fox debating Kilmeade over it, and Rand Paul made Kilmeade sound like an idiot over it. You know, even Dick Durbin's against it, you know, but his was purely political, right? It's more like, yeah, is it the smartest political move to piss off the young people in this country, you know, as a voting strategy, as a vote gathering strategy, is that the smartest thing to take away something that the kids love so much, that 18 to 24 group, say, is it smart to take away something they love and ban it, right? And basically, what the act says is like, hey, we're going to ban. Well, it's tailored to be any application, any mobile app, desktop app, website. But it really, it even references, as an example, TikTok and its parent company. But it's meant to ban because the theory here is that it's a national security threat from the Chinese. Now, this is nonsense on several different levels, right? How does the government legitimately ban a product whose only service, a service whose only product, whose only outcome is speech? It's free speech, right? People use TikTok to express themselves. Now, is it idiotic expression in most places? Yeah, look, I'm too old for TikTok, okay? It's for the teens. It's for the kids. It's not for me, okay? I'm not running around. I don't have TikTok on my phone. I don't have it on my desktop. As a company, Grumblings Media has a TikTok account just because it's an outlet. But me personally, I don't bother with TikTok, okay? But I'm also not so obtuse as to not understand, like, this is something for a different generation of libertarians. It's something for a different generation of Americans. The younger crowd loves TikTok. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. That's beautiful. Why is the government so afraid? First, they said it was a national security issue, okay? That the Chinese government can force the parent company of TikTok to use its algorithm to collect data on American users. This whole thing sounds sketchy. It's almost like the Patriot Act, right? They're using the fear of China. By the way, the fear of China that's being stoked by the same Republicans that authored the bill, okay? But you can't blame it just on Republicans because Democrats voted for this bill overwhelmingly as well. It's the same fear that the Chinese are the big bad boogeymen, right? So they're using that just like in the 50s, McCarthy used the Soviet Union, right? It's like these Chinese communists are coming here to destroy us, right? So this TikTok app is owned by, what's the name of the company? I forget. But the parent company of TikTok, and as soon as I run across it in my paperwork here as we're talking, I'll mention it. But TikTok, for all intents and purposes, you know, that their algorithm can be used to collect data on Americans, and that data that's been collected, the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, can demand and force TikTok to give it to them. Okay. Let me let you people in on something. Guess what? There is nothing on the internet that does not collect information on its users. Zero. Okay, if you somehow manage to block all cookies, all variables, all behind the scenes machinery and chicanery that takes place in order to track you, guess what you have? A useless internet experience. Listen to any digital marketer, okay? Their whole existence is centered around learning as much as possible about your online behavior. Libertarians hate that, right? Like, we hate the idea, the concept that other people are spying on us or keeping track of what we do. I'm not minimizing that. But to somehow think that TikTok is the only social media app in particular that does this is a ridiculous premise. A lot of the House members who were briefed on this in committee, the ones who voted no especially, came out and said there was nothing in these briefings that indicated that TikTok in particular poses a particular threat to national security. That there is nothing in there that Facebook doesn't do, hasn't done. Do you know what? Like, I once had the opportunity to talk, have a meeting or two with the head, this was like 10, 15 years ago, right? The head of analytics for Facebook. Little woman, about 4'11", I think. When you looked at her, totally unimposing, but massively intelligent. And she ran this data program, this analytics program, and insight program for Facebook. The stuff they had, you know, it was unbelievable. How do you think they get their advertising to be so targeted? You know, when you buy ads on Facebook, you can pick things like, hey, I want male Republicans between the ages of 21 and 23 that reside in these zip codes. And you can buy ads that will go only to those people, right? How do you think they know all that? So the concept that TikTok is unique in this matter is ridiculous. But the legislation would either ban TikTok or give them, I think, 5 months to divest themselves of their current ownership and be sold to an American company or to an American investment group. Think about that, okay? This bill says if you're not American-made, we can actually force you to sell your company to American interests. And the lie we're going to use to justify it is that you're a threat to national security. Sounds a lot like the Patriot Act, except it's the Patriot Act for speech, right? Now, when you look at the bill, and I have that here, so if I look over, forgive me because I haven't memorized all 15 pages of this nonsense, but they have terms like foreign controlled adversary, foreign controlled company, covered companies. Like they use this language, right? And then you'll hear something like this. It says, the definition of a controlled foreign adversary. The term controlled by a foreign adversary means, with respect to a covered company or other entity, that such company or other entity is a foreign person that is domiciled in, is headquartered in, has its principal place of business in, or is organized under the laws of a foreign country, foreign adversary country. Okay, you got all that? Replace foreign adversary country with China in this case, right? An entity with respect to which a foreign person or combination of foreign persons described in subparagraph A directly or indirectly owns at least a 20% stake, or C, a person subject to the direction or control of a foreign person or entity described in subparagraph A or B. Now, think about that last paragraph, right? You don't have to be a corporation, right? So you don't have to be a corporation, say, in China, a Chinese incorporated business to run afoul of this law. You can be a person subject, not even employed by, subject to the direction or control of a foreign person or entity. Okay? So you might ask yourself, well, what determines if I, for example, how would the determination potentially be that Big John is being controlled by the guy I get my Chinese takeout from, who happens to be an agent of the Chinese Communist Party in a sleeper cell here in America? Right? Well, that's what they're getting at, right? They're setting up a back door to basically accuse anyone they don't care for who owns an application that they don't care for to be controlled by a foreign person or entity. And by the way, who decides what is to be categorized as a foreign person or public entity or a foreign person or entity? the president. It's not even a vote in Congress. It's not a referendum of any sort. It is purely at the discretion of the president. The president has to say, upon, quote, review of interagency process to be determined later, that, hey, the president can say, like, I think the Chinese are out to get us. Then he could wake up next week, and if there's a popular rap, like, picture this. If Biden is president, God forbid if Trump is president again, or if either one of them is president for that matter, if there's a particular app, say, X, that is shitting on the current president, the current president can make the determination, for example, that Elon Musk is under the control of a foreign adversary country, and therefore X can be either banned or forced to be sold by Elon to an American investor group. And Elon might be an American citizen, so I don't know. But if they determined that he was under foreign direction or control, and that determination comes at the president. So, for example, let's say Elon is shitting constantly on Biden, and Biden, say, wins this next cycle again. Biden could, if this passes, this resolution passes, this act passes, Biden could say, you know what? I have information that Elon Musk is under the direction and control of the Chinese Communist Party. And he is the owner of X. Elon has 5 months to sell Twitter to an approved American business interest, or Twitter will be banned in the United States. Sound crazy to you? I guess it's possible under the way I read this act, that's possible. Just like in the Patriot Act, right? It would never be used illegally. Patriot Act wouldn't be used to spy on American citizens, would it? Would it? Would the government do something like that? I think we all know the answer to that, right? It's not a conspiracy theory. It's fact. It's happened. And I don't think there's any doubt that it's happened. It's just that you get debate over whether it was necessary or not. And you know what? To me, sometimes, even the sheer stupidity of the execution of something as ludicrous as this is stunning to me. This House passed, this bill passed in the House. I'm recording this on the 14th. This passed the House yesterday. Today, we find out Steve Mnuchin, former Reagan, I think, Secretary of Treasury, has already announced that he's put together an investment group to buy TikTok. Geez, isn't that convenient? The government declares TikTok to be a threat to national security. And they say you either have to cease all operations in the U.S. or you have to sell. And wouldn't you know it, just by dumb luck, a day later, less than a day later, there's an investment group headed up by a former Trump flunky. Isn't that an amazing coincidence? And ironically, I think that even though he initially wanted TikTok banned while he was in office, now Trump says it was a bad move. Still trying to hash that out, why he would flip-flop like that. My guess is he understands his numbers are not where they need to beat Biden right now, so he needs to get the young demo over to his side. That's my cynical take on that. But we'll see what happens on that one. We'll see what happens in the Senate, you know, because like I said, it's not a slam dunk in the Senate. Rand Paul has already said he opposes it. Durbin, as I mentioned, opposes it. And you know what's interesting also? A lot of the arguments, when you see a lot of these goddamn hucksters in the House who were stumping to pass this bill, they would mention national security, but eventually the conversation would always go to, and do we want, like Kilmeade was trying to convince, you know, putting across the Fox talking points on this to Rand Paul during their interview, where he was like, well, Are you trying to tell me you think it's right that a country like China would have this much influence over Americans? Think about that. It's not just national security. It's that they don't want, even if the Chinese were the ones that were doing this directly, right? That CCP was the controlling entity here of the content on TikTok. You are saying you want to ban this application based purely on ideological grounds. It's a First Amendment issue. And if we allow the government to ban TikTok because we're afraid they may corrupt the youth, the minds of the youth, how is that not a First Amendment violation? It is literally the same thing as Hustler can't be allowed to be on newsstands because young kids might see it. It is the same as these stupid school boards banning books. And I'm not talking about like graphic sex novels for second graders. I mean, banning books like Catcher in the Rye, To Kill a Mockingbird, things like that. Those horrible influences on young minds. So, like, really, this whole TikTok thing to me strikes me as something that is so transparently political. And to be fair, I think every libertarian I follow on Twitter, every libertarian that's spoken up on this that I've seen so far has the same position, right? This is ridiculous and should not be tolerated. And honestly, there's so many different angles you could take. First of all, TikTok really isn't owned by the Chinese. Rand Paul, and these are his stats, so take them with a grain of salt right now, but he was saying that 60% of TikTok is owned by various international investors. 20% is owned by the founders of TikTok, meaning the two guys who came up with the software, who invented the software, wrote the software, and those two guys happen to be Chinese. But there's no evidence at all that they're agents of the Chinese Communist Party. They just happen to be Chinese developers. And I think 20% of TikTok is owned by employees of TikTok, profit sharing situation where 20% of the company is actually owned by its workers. And of TikTok employees, 7,000 of those who own 20% of the company, 7,000 of those employees are American citizens. So it's not even clear that TikTok is necessarily a direct agent of the Chinese government. Okay? And even if it were, I would think that the correct position, I was going to say the correct libertarian position, but I just think the correct position in general would be, hey, government, you've done your job. You've warned us of the potential dangers that TikTok might be stealing our data. You've warned us about that. Because once you've done that, any American who's worried about their data being stolen can choose not to load TikTok on their phone, can choose to unload TikTok, run a virus, antivirus, make sure there's none of it left on your phone or your desktop or your laptop, and just not use it. And I think this also bears repeating, they haven't broken any laws. I mean, was there anything more inane than watching those hearings where the CEO of TikTok was being grilled by, I think it was a senator or a congressman, I forget who it was, but it was inane. He kept saying, "Are you a member of the Chinese Communist Party?" And the CEO kept saying, "No, I'm a senator, I'm Singaporean. I'm from Singapore. Are you a Chinese national?" "Senator, I have a Singaporean passport. I served in the Singaporean military. I am not Chinese." "Have you ever worked for the Chinese Communist Party?" "Again, Senator, I'm from Singapore. My wife is an American citizen." "Have you become a naturalized American citizen?" "No." "Why not?" You know what I mean? It is literally very similar to the McCarthyism of the 1950s. Unless that guy walked into Congress waving two American flags with sparkles flying out of his ass, singing the national anthem, that inquisitor was not going to be convinced of anything other than his truth, which was that this guy was an agent of the Chinese Communist Party. Now, look, who knows if he is or not? I don't think he is. There's no evidence that he is. So if 5 years from now it turns out that he was an agent of the Chinese Communist Party being used to me. But the truth of the matter is there's no evidence suggesting that that's the case. It's just the paranoia of it's either the paranoia or the pandering of certain government elected officials who are choosing to make China the boogeyman and use it as the excuse to pass more authoritarian, totalitarian measures in our society. And that's what it is. That's all it is. You're worried about TikTok? Don't install it. You choose to, like, to me, it's like with the vaccine, right? You think the vaccine is poison? Don't take it. You think it's a Jewish plot to control the minds of young white girls or whatever the hell is coming out of QAnon? Fine, don't take the vaccine. You want to take the vaccine? Take it. The government should have no role in forcing you to take it, to not take it. Same thing when it comes to speech, even more so when it comes to speech. You're afraid that TikTok is collecting your data and sending it to China? Don't use TikTok. I don't know what could be simpler than that. It's like people who are constantly wanting to censor TV. If you don't like what's on TV, turn it off. You don't like what's streaming on Netflix? Stop your subscription. I don't understand why this has to be made so difficult. Like, I'm willing to go only this far. If you as the government want to put a warning label on something and say, in our opinion, this is what we think about this product or service, great. Put your advisory on there. Fair enough. I'm willing to accept that. I'm not an absolutist like that. Go ahead, put your warning on there. But prevent me from partaking or not partaking or control my activity on that front? Nope. Nope, nope, nope. No, sir, no thank you, Mr. Government. That's not happening. All right. I think I'm talked out for this episode. So, thank you all for joining me once again on Free For All. I hope this wasn't a boring episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Please leave a comment below or send me. You can find me on X. That's basically where I reside these days. Go to X. Look for me at BigJohn_SXM. At BigJohn_SXM. Leave me a few comments there. If you're so kind enough to follow me, that's great. You could also find us at the company Twitter handle, at Grumblings Media, all one word, at Grumblings Media. Or you can go to grumblingsmedia.com. Check out all our great podcasts. You can watch more past free-for-all episodes. You can watch my interview show, The Big Questions with Big John. I think I've interviewed just about every LP presidential candidate. The only one I don't have is Joshua Smith of the Major Guys. Everyone else I've managed to interview. Go check it out if you want to learn more about the LP candidates for this cycle. If you're of the conservative bent, and I don't know why you would be, but if you're a conservative, go check out a great show called Fired Up. My partner William Del Pilar, the conservative Latino, has Fired Up. Great. If you're a conservative, maybe even a libertarian, go check it out. Some great points being made there by William and his guests. We also have a couple of other episodes, Red, White, and Rude, which focuses on anti-woke entertainment news. And you could also check out our sports-themed podcast called Points on the Board. Okay, go to grumblingsmedia.com. You'll have all of that at your fingertips. All right, until next time, this has been Big John. Hope to see you again next week. Peace, everyone.